Were there any unreleased songs that you guys did? Like, I'm sure there's quite a few, but...
Of what now?
Of unreleased stuff that you guys did, like songs. Songs that you guys didn't release on the records.
You're asking me a question that I would have started losing memory of 16 years ago or 15 years ago. You know, in all honesty, I can't remember that. I'm so sorry. I'm sure that there was, because there was things, you know, like we really hadn't recorded a lot of the stuff. We hadn't been to the studio, like, you know, in a while before we broke up. So I'm probably sure there was stuff, but man, it would take me literally finding set lists and looking at it to be able to name you things, and I'm so sorry. That's a distant memory that I just can't cough up at this moment. Unfortunately.
What was, I saw something in Cool Beans about a kitchen tape or something that you guys did?
Oh, that was a tape that was almost, it was a tape that actually Tim just dubbed off. It was called The Kitchen Tapes, and it was more of a joke than anything, and it was literally a tape that we taped, that Tim taped on a home recording machine, literally like, you know, like just a two condenser mic recording thing, and it got asked for because he said something about it in a talk to a little fanzine from Washington State at one time. I believe he mentioned it, and then a few people wanted it, and then it became something that people asked for a little bit, but it was never an in-production thing or something that set with like 50 in a box waiting to be sold by any means. It was literally just a throw-off thing right at the first that Tim titled The Kitchen Tapes, you know, and it wasn't any studio effort whatsoever. It's just a recording at the house. But as far as I remember, I've got a copy of it, and, you know, it's raw as hell, and it's those first few songs we were doing, but it's a, you know, it's a blast of a moment in time.
We're still, Nix and I are still waiting for the spot to put out the rec collection and everything, and there's a lot of stuff like Bang Zoom had something on it, I guess a song on their that little audio cassette.
Right.
And a lot of that hard to find stuff that, we haven't been able to, that they didn't put out with Touch and Go, that we're just like, oh, please put out another CD and put all the other stuff on one CD.
There you go. Tim has been real good because he may have had a lot, and also Spot, you know, has been living here since Rec Collection came out, and that was about 87, so he's been living here a pretty good while, so.
Yeah, we were going to try to find him, we were just like, yeah.
Between him and Tim, and I don't know if Chris had it or not, but even maybe the studio had, they still had probably the master tapes from those sessions, and I think that's probably where they called some of those couple of different odd things that were on Rec Collection off of, and just like, you know, the stuff that didn't make it to the record at that time.
Even I think one song off the Raul's split was Authority. I don't even think that was put on Touch and Go. That was like, that's the one song they excluded from all those records.
I think so. One thing I must admit and tell you is that, you know, like, once the Big Boys broke up under the circumstances that it did, I have only been in the presence and company of those people maybe 5 times in 15 years. So I don't know their lives, and I don't know what they do, you know, in all honesty, and that puts a reference point to what I know, you know, about what their lives are and what they do. So, you know, questions about what happened in 89 and 90 and stuff like that, I'm not very familiar with what they have at all going on, you know. I know what I did, but for them, I really don't know.
Okay, what were some of your favorite bands at the time, and tell us more about the lineage of bands and musicians in the Austin scene. Everyone seems to be connected somehow, like in those early days, like a really weird six degrees of Kevin Bacon, you know, the Austin punk rock scene thing.
Right, he did, it seemed like he did a lot of filming back then, you know, he was coming out and doing, if it's the same person, I think it is, right, he was a videographer.
Right.
Yeah, he did a lot of stuff back then. Bands that made me feel real good back then, an early band called The Reactors, which was a little three-piece pop band that, you know, some of those people are still around. The drummer was the brother to Fred Schultz. That was the Big Boy second drummer, and always liked those guys really well, and a real horribly raw gunslinger, almost like a way, way, way precursor to, like, L.A. Guns or Guns N' Roses type gunslinging guitar stuff was Sharon Tate's baby, and they had a nutty-ass singer that was crazy and, you know, did a lot of really overt anti-political stuff, and I enjoyed those guys a lot, you know, and people like Doctor's Mob, which was the first drummer, Steve Collier's band that he got in later on after he had left the Big Boys. They had a band called Doctor's Mob, and it was like, you know, real cool power pop. Not anything, you know, if you said the word replacements, you might get near them, but not really, you know, because they were more Buzzcocks power pop than what the replacements were. And, man, I really enjoyed those guys a lot. They always inspired me. And for the total Motorhead whack, you couldn't beat the Offenders from here in Austin. And they were always really fun because they just had the bass player who plays like Slayer bass player, just plays a little, you know, lead bass, just eating it alive. And the guitarist looked like Lemmy, but could just play fucking badass rock and roll. And those guys were always real good when I wanted a good fat dose of powerhouse, you know, Iggy Pop rock and roll. Those guys were the rage. And Really Red from Houston, those guys were just so good. And seeing them, the Butthole Surfers, early, we gave them their first show here in Austin in about late 81, I guess, probably, and they were so twisted right off the bat, you know, Shaw Sleeps in Lee Harvey's Grave and doing all that stuff, and I'm going, oh my God, these guys are great, listen to this absurd doo-doo, you know, they're playing, and that's the kind of music I've really always liked, and if I had a really cool-ass band, I would suggest the something that has the vent of the Butthole Surfers and the power of the Butthole Surfers to play like a motherfucker but still talk about cheese with prizes in it and stuff, you know, because I love them for that what they are. It was a tremendous amount of stuff back then, you know, so much. And everybody was influenced by each other because bands, you know, like somebody like would be in three different bands, and there were so many kinds of bands. And like, as I say, the scene here was like punk rockers and the slobs and the ne'er-do-wells, but a lot of the scene here was the radio, television, film department art students from UT, which literally the big complex of all that was right across the street. So many of those people were like the total art damage people and already had, you know, access to tape machines and weird shit, and doing this, like a band called Radio Free Europe back then was already doing like dumbass tape loops and, you know, real dissonant radio stuff and chanted vocals and spoken vocals and weird stuff, and that was like in 79 and stuff. So those guys, you know, like were just totally weird, and everybody would go see them, as well as they would go see like the Gunslinger guitarists, rock and rollers, because I don't think people had set rules in their heart yet as of what was the cool thing to do at that time. You know, everything was cool. It was just all so vibrant and fresh. Every fucking thing that was happening was cool.
But was there still like a feeling of something going down in those days, like the pioneering of punk rock and new directions of music?
Oh, definitely so. Well, you know, you lived in Texas, you know what it was. Right. And before that, you know, there was like really good rock and roll clubs like Armadillo World Headquarters and Soap Creek Saloon, but those were pretty middle of the road, Americana, you know, people like, you know, I don't even know, I can't even name those bands, I don't even want to try to name bands, but it was all the middle of the road American bands at that time that were popular, but it wasn't anything that was really crushingly exciting. And then things I saw, like the Runaways at Armadillo World Headquarters in about 77. I saw the Police when, you know, Put On Your Red Dress first came out. You know, and we can look back at that now and go, oh, Wimp City. But man, I'm guaranteeing at that time when that song came out, it was king. You know, I mean, it was really happening. You know, and it was happening good because it wasn't Jerry Jeff Walker, it wasn't Willie Nelson, which Austin was full of at that time. And it had its own place, and I love all those people for what they do, the country western scene, the jazz scene, but, you know, I just seeked more because I was living on the edge of the art world. I needed more. And when the scene started coming here in like about 77, a tiny bit, 78, went to the New Wave Battle of the Bands here in town, you know, but there was like six bands, a couple from Dallas, one from Houston, a couple of New Wave bands. So it was like, oh, my Lord, it's 1978. Here's like a New Wave Battle of the Bands. So stuff is starting to happen, and man, that stirred a lot of people, and it wasn't long before after that, especially like in 79, did this scene just blossom, and it was like, Raul's is a place to play. If you get a band, you've got a place to play. The guy loves you. He loves everybody. So does the people at Duke's Royal Coach Inn, Club Foot. If you get something going on, you got a gig. And so that inspired a lot of people, and a lot of it was crap, but a lot of it was magic as hell. Like people like the Dicks, like the Butthole Surfers, like Scratch Acid, that half of them turned into Jesus Lizard. You know, people like that. People went on and really did stuff, you know, and really, you know, made a historical niche for themselves and made Austin be somewhere that things came from that grew and got better and good. So it's a great lineage to know that there was so much back then that still exists today, and we have that history of good to rely on, which gives people a feeling inside that, yeah, it's not a hole in the dirt. It's something that's happened before. It's just waiting for the new cycle to come along and kick us in the butts to go forward and have thousands of new good things happening. And there's a lot here in the city right now that's happening, like Brown Hornet and Pocket Fisherman and Fastball, even though they're total power pop men. Those guys got some things going on. They're good people. So there's a lot still happening in the young, modern, new wave scene here. It's just going to get more and better. And everybody says that, so it's cool.
God, there's been, like, since you, there's like a fucking marching band out there, and then right before that there was a fire drill. People do not want us to have this interview. I don't know what the deal is.
What is there, a parade or something?
I don't know. It's like a march. Like, we just had this football game, and then the fire alarm went off twice.
Oh, my God.
And I'm trying to, like, cover up the phone so it doesn't come on the recorder, you know.
Hopefully it's all there, then. What else is happening? I'm just glad to be alive, man. Tell the world that I am glad to be alive and getting to do so much new stuff. I've never stopped producing things. Unfortunately, some of it is not in the public eye. Like, musicians are fortunate because when you do stuff and you play out to the public and you put out records, people know about you so much. The magnificent writers, the magnificent artists, those people don't get the press that music does. But I'm trying so hard on that respect, and I have hundreds of friends that are just as important to me as the musicians that play guitars that I know across America that deserve the same respect as musicians do and film people. There's just so much good that's out there that we, such, what a, you know, a great source to choose from and be inspired by. So I'm just trying to say that my life is good right now because I got so many good influences.
How do you feel about the current revival of pop punk and its mass popularity? Do you see a basic difference from that, say, the kind of music that you and your contemporaries were making? How's the underground music scene today different from the late 70s, early 80s?
Oh, some of it today is just like brown-colored paper on, paint on cardboard. Brown-colored paint on cardboard. I don't know. You know, I see a few bands out there that I really, really do enjoy, but I listen to a lot of stuff that's on, like, the local hip radio stations here, and it's just the same beat over and over, over and over. And I don't want to point names, but people like, you know, Jawbox, that tries to sound like Social Distortion, and all that real basic, and it's like melodic core or something other, to where it's just really pretty fucking safe. And they all seem to sound a lot, you know, and it's almost to me like people dress and set themselves up to be a commercial lunchbox before they really deeply think about what they've got to make the music and say about, you know. It's almost a commercial.
God.
What's happening?
The fucking tape fell off the table. Hold on a second. Shut the damn windows. Turn all those lights on, dude, so I can see if the tape's moving or not.
Oh, I hope it got this.
People are pissing me off.
Throw something, shoot out the window, a volley of gunfire.
Yeah, no, they're out on the freaking drill field, and they're just like, you know, marching back and forth. Just doing, I'm like, what is this?
They're getting ready for something highly important, like to pass out on that damn football field in the wool uniform.